Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. While a day continues to be 24 hours long, oftentimes we pack more activities, more productivity, and more things into any given day, with the result of more unease, hurry, and stress. A common thread to today's complexity in workplace, media, home, and relationships is a yearning for simplicity, meaningfulness, and purpose. Well, today we'll meet two young men, lifelong friends who stepped off the treadmill of corporate America for a more simplistic life and a more purposeful one at the same time. Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus are the minimalist, part of a growing group of people who focus on relationships, life experiences, and personal satisfaction over object status and material wealth. They're the writers of the Minimalist.com blog, which hosts over 2 million readers, and co-author of a couple of books. Their first, Minimalism, Live a Meaningful Life, was, as they put it, a how-to book. And their latest, Everything That Remains a Memoir, is the why-to story of Milburn's life, with footnotes from Nicodemus. They'll be talking about their book as a part of a 100-city tour tonight in Broken Arrow at the Book Place at 732 West New Orleans. They'll be speaking about their books this evening at 6. And they join us today on Studio Tulsa. Josh and Ryan, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You guys were both in corporate culture early in your 20s. And in fact, in the course of Everything That Remains, we learned that, Ryan, you really started like right out of high school and went right into corporate culture and were making six-figure salaries. And then you guys one day said, I'm going to give up most of the things I've worked, what I thought was the American dream, to live a different lifestyle.
Right.
Can you guys talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. You know, Ryan and I have known each other since we were fat little fifth graders. and so we sort of spent our time together in high school, and then we climbed the corporate ladder together. And in my life, I got everything I ever wanted. By age 27, I was the youngest director in our company's 140-year history. And I had all the trappings of success with that as well. I had, you know, the big house with more bedrooms than inhabitants. I had fancy cars, closets filled with clothes, you know, full basement, entertainment room, and all the stuff in my life. And, you know, even now, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with the stuff. The problem was I was just following a template of here's what you're supposed to do to be successful. But I realized that once I got everything that I ever wanted, that everything I ever wanted wasn't actually what I wanted at all. And then two events happened when I was 28, so this is about 4 years ago. I'm 32 now. My mother died and my marriage ended, both in the same month.
Whoa.
And I just started looking around at all the stuff in my life, all of this supposed achievement and success, and started questioning, what really is success and why am I so discontented? Why have I given so much meaning to the material possessions in my life? And I discovered this thing called minimalism. I just stumbled across it online, that beautiful rabbit hole of the internet. And I dug deeper and I found this whole community of people from young entrepreneurs who traveled the world and carried with them only the things they owned to people with large families, you know, a guy named Leo Babalta with six kids, or Joshua Becker who has a full-time job and lives in the suburbs in a house, or Courtney Carver with her teenage daughter in Utah. And all these people had these different backgrounds, these different situations, but they all attributed their more deliberate, meaningful lives to this thing called minimalism. And so I spent about 8 months really paring down my life, questioning each sort of artifact in my life and saying, you know, does this thing actually add value to my life? And after I did it over and over and over, I realized that I could clear the clutter, get rid of the superfluous stuff in my life, and figure out what was truly important. And the things that were important weren't actually things at all. They were things like health. You know, at one point I weighed 80 pounds more than I weigh now, which is hard to believe because I'm a fairly thin guy.
I weigh a lot more than I do now.
But not only that, I just didn't feel very healthy. I didn't feel good. Like my relationships as well, that was a very important area of my life that I was forsook for the longest time. My marriage ended because of it. And I found that I was spending time with relationships that were birthed out of proximity or convenience as opposed to values or beliefs or even common interests necessarily. And a bunch of other areas of my life that were far more important than the stuff. But as I went down that journey of paring down, I started to feel lighter and calmer and happier and less stressed. And Ryan came to me and said, hey, man, I noticed, you know, we've both been miserable in this corporate world for a long time, climbing the ladder together. And, you know, I've noticed lately you've been, you know, skating through life a little bit easier. Why is that? Why the heck are you so happy lately? And I said, well, you know, I've been trying this thing called minimalism. You know, it's not like I jumped up and went around and told people, look at me, I'm becoming a minimalist. I just showed people that I was really happy, the benefits of minimalism. And I said, you know what, Ryan, you know, we've been great friends for a long time, and you've got a lot of junk, so maybe this might work for you, too.
Yeah, he's absolutely right.
Well, I was going to ask you, as you're watching him change, since you guys were basically working together,
right,
grew up together, all of a sudden you see this huge change in him. What was your reaction, Ryan?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. So after he had got divorced, he moved into a new place. It was a smaller place. And the first thing I noticed was he didn't have a TV. Like, he'd lived there for a month or two, and eventually I was like, you know, hey, dude, when are you going to get a TV? Everyone has a TV.
That's what you're supposed to do, right?
And he said, you know, I think I'm going to go without TV for a little bit. You know, it's kind of a distraction. I spend a lot of time watching it. I'd rather do other things, like write. He's always been passionate about writing.
Now, how far were you into this at this point when you gave up the TV?
You know, actually, it was sort of an accident that I gave up to you. I moved into a new apartment, like he said, and I just didn't acquire one when I moved in there. It was weird because one of the lines in the book is, even while Rome is burning, there's somehow time for shopping at IKEA, because that was my first inclination. My mother died, my marriage ended, and I'm moving to this new apartment, like buying a bunch of stuff that I'm supposed to buy. And there's nothing wrong with the stuff. There's nothing wrong with a bed or a desk or a sofa. The problem was I just didn't question why I was buying those things. Were they actually going to add value to my life?
No, Ryan, so you see him, he doesn't buy a TV. How did you react to that? What was your thought process?
Well, you know, that was kind of around the time when he had said to me, hey, there's this thing called minimalism that you might be interested in, because I did have a lot of stuff. And I thought to myself, okay, I've known Josh since, you know, we were fat little fifth graders. I know he's not insane. So I'll hear him out just to kind of see, you know, the approach he's taking with life now. And he introduced me to, you know, that community of people that he discovered, just people who were from all different backgrounds, living deliberate lives, living meaningful lives. They seemed much richer than any of the so-called corporate guys I worked with in the corporate world. So I thought, okay, this is maybe something that I could get into. And it's funny because I thought instantly, you know, me being the problem-solving guy that I am, I thought, okay, I'll do this. I'll be a minimalist. This looks like it'll, you know, help me gain a different perspective on life. I'm in. I'm a minimalist. Now what? Because, you know, I don't want to spend months paring down my items like Josh had. You know, of course, I wanted faster results. So for me, it started with a packing party. Josh and I came up with this idea where we would pack up all my belongings as if I were moving. So Josh literally helped me box up everything in my 3-bedroom, 2-living room. I have no idea why a single guy needs 2 living rooms. In my, you know, 2,000 square foot place, we boxed up everything like I was moving. He helped me pack up my clothes, my kitchenware, my towels, my electronics, my TVs, my frame photographs and paintings, my toiletries, even my furniture. I mean, we literally acted like I was moving. So after like 9 hours and a couple pizza deliveries, everything was packed.
Were you paring down as you packed?
Yeah. So the idea wasn't to, you know, throw anything away right off the bat. It had got to a point in my life where I didn't know what was important. I'd accumulated all of these things, and, you know, instead of it bringing me happiness, I was, you know, faced with anxiety and debt and stress and discontent. I mean, I was just miserable. So the idea was to, you know, really try and figure out, what is it that I have in my life? What possessions do I have in my life that actually do bring me joy and that do add value, that I'm not just compulsively consuming? So the packing party, we didn't throw anything out right away. What I did was, over 21 days, I unpacked things only as I needed them. So like that first night, you can imagine I unpacked my toothbrush, my bed and bed sheets, some clothes for work the next day, so forth and so on. I did that over the next 21 days. At the end of that experiment, I had 80% of my stuff still sitting in those boxes, just sitting there. Yeah, I looked at those boxes, and I couldn't even remember what was in most of them. All those things that were supposed to make me happy, they just weren't doing their job. So I donated and sold all of it.
Yeah.
And that was really the beginning of our website, theminimalists.com. We started with that 21-day journey. And it's funny, I went to Josh and I was like, I think I got something here. I think people will connect with this story. You know, I don't think, you know, everyone needs to hear this story, but I think there are people out there who will get this.
One of the things that I was struck by as you were talking about some of the people who embrace this lifestyle is minimalism means different things to different people. Yeah. The person I think you were first inspired with said he owned 50 things.
Right. It's funny because that's the first person that Josh introduced me to. Mm-hmm. His name's Colin Wright, and he's a great guy. We're friends with him now. But it was funny because I saw that, and it was so extreme for me. I thought, dude, I don't want to just own 50 things. Like, that's pretty extreme. But yeah, then there were other people who, like Josh had mentioned, have families. And there's a guy named Joshua Becker. You know, he was the second guy I was introduced to. He has, you know, a couple kids. He's got a house and a car and a full-time job. And he lives a very normal life. It's just applying these minimalist principles is what really helps him live deliberately.
And I guess it is different things to different people. And what struck me is it's part of this sort of 21st century meme that everybody's looking for a purpose-filled life. You know, yeah. there's that in Christian circles and simplicity. And you know, it's a big, I think it's just a sort of reaction to an incredibly complex, fast-moving, and sometimes like, you know, roller coaster life.
That
if you're participating in big business, it's about how do we do something faster that we did a little longer yesterday. It's how do we make more than we did yesterday, that sort of thing. And I think there are a lot of people rebelling against that. Was that part of where you guys were coming from?
I do think it's quite a reaction to consumerism, you know, the post-industrial era of consumption. You know, advertising went from a point where it fulfilled a need to creating this new supposed need for stuff. And I know it intimately. I was a director for 150 retail stores. So I realize that's ironic now with the whole minimalism thing. But we worked hard to create a need, to create urgency or scarcity. And I realized that wasn't really in line with my values anymore. But you're absolutely right. I feel like it is a reaction to this busy, 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 always going, fast-paced world. It's overwhelming at times. And one of my favorite quotes is from Thoreau. He said, you know, it's not enough to be busy. The question is, what are you busy about? Is what you're doing actually meaningful? Is essentially what he's saying. And that really took me back because I wasn't focused on things that were essentially meaningful in my own life.
Mm-hmm. My guests today are Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus. They write the Minimalist blog, and they're appearing at a book place in Broken Arrow this evening at 6 o'clock, part of a tour that goes along with the book Everything That Remains, a memoir by the Minimalists, which is really, Josh, your story, but with footnotes by Ryan. And I guess this is a different, you guys have been writing together and writing blog entries for a while. You have what, about 2 million readers, I guess?
Yeah, somewhere. We had just over 2 million readers last year visit the website.
Mm-hmm. This book, I guess, is your, what, second book together?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Josh has been writing fiction as well.
Right.
Yeah, we wrote that first book, Minimalism, Live a Meaningful Life. We wrote that together. And Josh had approached me with another idea for a second book. And it was really about, you know, our... The Live a Meaningful Life was more of a how-to book, and mm-hmm. this was more of a why-to book.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, this is a great idea, but why don't we try doing something a little bit different? Because, you know, Josh is really, he's really the natural writer. I mean, he's a really good writer. And I thought, why don't you, you know, tell your version of the story, and then I will interject throughout the story with my own thoughts and, you know, smart-alecky comments. And I'm sure there's some profound stuff in there as well in the footnotes. But it's basically this first person nonfiction narrative where, you know, there
you
are,
see, it's very mimetic of our own relationship. We like to
interrupt
each other a lot.
Right, just like that.
Well, one of the things that I want to ask about, because both of you were making big money jobs, and this is sort of, that's the definition of success in America, really, you know.
Unfortunately.
And Josh, you basically submitted a reorganization plan that said the first termination was yourself.
Right.
That was a huge, huge step.
It was terrifying.
Because as you see, minimalism can be manifested with a job.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the big leap of faith.
Right.
And it was really a leap of faith for both of you.
You know, I think that, like I said, there's nothing wrong with working a 9-to-5. I think we all have to pay the bills, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just that what I was doing really didn't align with my values. And as my values became clear, as I uncovered them, I was essentially getting the clutter out of the way to figure out what my values and beliefs actually were and solidify those. I realized that what I was doing wasn't in line with that. And so, Yeah, when my boss came to me and said, you know, you have to close 8 more retail stores, and I've been through this before. It was a reorganization, let go of 42 employees. I had done something similar in the past, and I put together a plan, and my name was the first one on the list. And he kind of thought I was joking at first, and I realized that, you know, I could move on. I was no longer tethered to the same identity and the same income I had before. That identity was the biggest part. Like, that title on the business card was that really simple answer. You know, we ask the question all the time, what do you do? It's one of the first things ask someone, what do you do? And I think it's an incredibly pernicious question because really, it's a broad question. I do a lot of things. I wear pants. I drink water. I walk down the street. But really, we're saying is how much money do you earn? Where do you work? So I can compare myself on the socioeconomic ladder.
Where do we rank?
Right. Yeah. Right.
Am I deferential to you or
right? Yeah. Let's compare our stats. Right. And so I had to change the answer to that question. I would tell people what I was passionate about because what I did wasn't inherently passionate about that. So. I realized that I was no longer tied to that identity, no longer tied to the income. Minimalism helped me sort of quench that discontent in my life because one of the biggest seeds of discontent in my life was money. Even though I made really good money, I spent even better money. And that equation just doesn't work. You know, and no matter how much money you're making, if you're spending more, you're going to go into debt. And so I had massive amounts of debt, and I had to untether from that. It took a while to do that.
What about that first day after, you know, it became official? What was that first day like? Was it a good day? Was it a scary day?
It was both. Yeah, I think fear and excitement look very similar, especially physiologically. That they mimic one another, right? You get the sweaty palms or the heart palpitations or whatever. You can be either excited or you can be fearful. But it was kind of like going from 100 miles an hour to 0 miles an hour. So you get quite the shock by slamming on the brakes. You realize I'm working 70 or 80 hours a week to, oh my gosh, what am I going to do now? Because we hadn't started the minimalist.com before I turned in my resignation and stuff. I mean, this was sort of something after the fact. My intention was just to write fiction and get a part-time job, enough money to pay the bills. I was going to work to live as opposed to live to work.
Yeah. And Ryan, for you, and I would be interesting, as you start embracing this lifestyle before you made the severance, did your coworkers notice a difference about you? I mean, I would think when you're not living to work, all of a sudden, people are saying, hey, are you all right? You know, I would think that would be sort of a natural reaction.
Yeah. So Josh was in the corporate world for a couple months after we started the website. I was in the corporate world for about 9 months after, maybe even a little bit over that. And yeah, certainly when you call yourself the minimalists, people notice. And let me just say too, like my intention was never to just quit my job and start a blog. That's probably the worst advice anyone can give. you know, I really had a plan to just pare down and really, you know, get rid of my big bills and make it to where I didn't have to rely on this, you know, six-figure income to live because that's where I'd gotten myself. But yeah, certainly when we came out with the minimalists, people were asking questions. You know, I'd get poked fun at. You know, when it was raise time, my boss would always be like, so you're a minimalist now. You don't need that raise, do you? You know, I'm certainly not allergic to money. That's not what minimalism means. But yeah, I'll tell you too, you really find out quickly who your friends are. Mm-hmm. You know, you really find out who's supporting you and who isn't supporting you. And it was hard. But looking back, I mean, it was just one of the best things that could have happened because I really did find out who was on my side and who wasn't. And, you know, I don't even really look at it as choosing a side as much as, you know, your true friends will support what you do. Your true friends care about your happiness. They don't care about your paycheck. They don't care about your possessions. They don't care about what kind of vacations you take or how big of a bar tab you can rack up and pay for. Mm-hmm. You know, your friends support your happiness. And, yeah, I certainly found out quickly who were and were not my friends.
Now, Josh, with you, you had this writing that was a passion, and you write about how you learned how to really make that happen more. I think you talk about a conversation in the book with another writer who gives the old-fashioned writer advice, which is, you know, what's the best way to become a writer? Well, put your butt in a chair and write.
Yeah, those four words changed my life. Sit in the chair. you know, because I was passionate about writing. For the longest time, I was an aspiring writer, which means I didn't write very much. And I always wanted to write, though. I confused excitement with passion, though. I would get excited about an idea, and I'd be excited for a day or maybe a week if I was lucky. But at some point, I would hit a wall, and that novel idea or short story idea or whatever it was would quickly dissipate because that I'd hit the wall and I'd say, well, why do I want to, you know, climb the wall when I could go do something much easier, like check email or watch TV or get on Facebook? None of those passive things are bad by themselves, but I turn to them as opposed to drudging through the drudgery. And I realized I actually had to put in the work if I wanted to create something that was of value, something that had a real payoff. All the payoff comes after you put in, you know, the time in the chair. And I realized that once I sat down and actually did it, that's when I got the real rewards, as opposed to moving on to the next thing that I was excited about. The real passion comes after you work past the excitement.
Now, Ryan, for you, what is your passionate outlet, the thing that sort of fuels you?
Yeah, I'm passionate about a lot of things. First off, I live in Montana, so there's a lot of outdoorsy things I can be passionate about. You know, I love to snowboard, I love to longboard, or anything with a board, mm-hmm. except waterboarding. Yeah. I don't really like that. but yeah. I'm also passionate about you know, mentoring other people. I do. That's one of the services that, you know, I provide, is mentoring others. I really enjoy just getting out and you know, telling my story and really helping people connect with that and adding value to other people.
And I assume you're far more happier with less money, and yet you've found a way to at least earn enough to make a living, which is, I think, yeah. the great fear for most people in, like, embracing a simpler lifestyle or leaving a career that they really don't find passion in.
You know, we've found people that show up at our events now. It's really amazing. We had an 11-year-old bring his father. We had an 83-year-old bring her great-granddaughter. But we've also had Occupy Wall Street folks show up at the same event as CEOs. And I found that even if you're a multi-million dollar CEO, you can apply the principles of minimalism. So it may not have to do really with the amount of money as much as it does with how deliberate are you living? How are you making these choices in your life? Because you saw in the book, I grew up really poor. And I thought the reason that we were unhappy was because we didn't have much money. And then I realized as I started climbing the ranks that I was making good money, but I was still making those same bad decisions with my money. So I was still poor, but in a different way. I was in massive debt, and I had all of these things that I was working 80 hours a week to pay for, but I didn't have control of my most precious asset, which was my time.
Yeah. My guests today are Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus, the Minimalists. They have a blog which they write on, and right now in their midst of a nationwide tour. This is the second tour you guys have done, I guess, mm-hmm. with each book right. you've written together. The first book was Minimalist, Live a Meaningful Life. The new one is Everything That Remains, a Memoir, which is, I guess, a why to. The first one is a how to, and they'll be appearing at the Book Place in Broken Arrow this evening at 6 o'clock. Book Place is located at 732 West New Orleans, and they're our guests today on Studio Tulsa. Well, you talked about boxing up your stuff, mm-hmm. and in the book you also talk about some of the things you gave up, which television, mm-hmm. the computer for a while.
It did, yeah. I like doing these little stoical experiments.
The mobile phone.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Right. So what was that experience like? You said these little experiments.
Right.
Were you missing the computer? Were you missing the television? Were you missing the phone? I mean, I can't imagine, like, a 20 and 30 something, you know, mobile phones is like, you know, it's like an attachment to your arm, you know.
It's an appendage. Yeah.
Yeah. So what was it like to leave those behind?
You know, I think for me, minimalism is not about deprivation, and we're certainly not Luddites. Like, I'm not telling anyone to get rid of their stuff. What I've found is that for me, temporary deprivation allows me to figure out what actually adds value to my life. So the cell phone experiment was something that was interesting. I realized I needed to probably change my habits when I started twitching for it all the time, you know, feeling that phantom vibrate or hearing these little bells and whistles that would go off. And I caught myself reaching for it at the urinal one day. And I know any guys who are listening right now know exactly what I'm talking about. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. Can I really not use the bathroom without reaching for my phone? I said, okay, well, I do these little experiments. Let me see what I can do to get rid of this for a while. So I said, I'm going to get rid of it for a couple months and just see what happens. And I learned so much about my stuff, about myself. But I also realized that, you know, bringing it back into my life, I would bring it back into my life because I did get value from certain aspects of it, whether it was using it as a communication device to actually talk, or, you know, send text messages, or, you know, GPS. And it's really great for things like that. So I use it a lot more deliberately. I use it differently from how I used to use it, but I still use a cell phone in my life. There are other things I got rid of. TV was one thing, and I don't think there's any, I really like TV. Even now, I'll plan to go watch TV at someone's house or something, and it'll be a much more meaningful experience. But I got rid of it because I used to watch it all the time, just incessantly would watch TV, you know. I was part of this, the statistics where it was, you know, 8 hours a day, just on like a fireplace, basically.
And for you, Ryan, I mean, you box everything up. Was there things that you say, well, I don't really need that, but I kind of want that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When I first went through that experiment, it was interesting to see kind of the pacifiers that I went for. So, like, in those first couple of days, I did reach for the TV. I did reach for the internet. And, you know, I learned quickly that those were huge time sucks in my life. I mean, it consumed a lot of my time. So now, yeah, I don't own a TV. I don't have internet. And again, like Josh said, just to reiterate, there's nothing wrong with having those things. It's how you use it. And for me, having those things, I use them as a pacifier. I use them, you know, it was my excuse to sit and do nothing and to just veg. And I think it's okay to sit and do that every once in a while. The problem is I was doing it too much.
I think your friend Colin believes in 20-minute sort of vegetation situation, yeah, where he doesn't do anything. And he says, I find myself more productive the rest of the day.
He calls it 20 minutes of awesome, which really is 20 minutes of doing nothing, like just sitting there and letting your mind wander off into, you know, wherever it goes. And it's sort of a decluttering of the mind. It's his form of meditation, I guess. And, yeah, we wrote about that in the book. It was a conversation between Ryan and Colin sort of toward the end there, where it's 20 minutes of literally doing nothing and letting your mind just sort of clear and getting the clutter out of your mind each day.
Yeah, you'd be amazed at what you experience from just sitting for 20 minutes and doing nothing and let your mind wander.
But some people call it meditation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we wish you great success with the book and your. How many cities are you going to? Like,
we're 50? Going to 100 cities. This is lucky number 13.
Yeah.
All right. And what is the reaction from people who? I mean, you're meeting a lot of readers who read the blog, but there's also a lot of people who just discover this because they're sort of in the same point in their life, maybe in their 30s, 40s, or 50s,
right. Mm-hmm.
That you guys were at the end of your 20s.
Yeah.
What's the reaction from them to what you guys talk about and what you write about?
It's been wonderful. Like I said, we get people from all different backgrounds, socioeconomic statuses who show up. And it's all about, we're all asking the same questions, though. How do I live more meaningfully? How do I live more deliberately? Why have I been so discontented? Or why have I given so much meaning to the material possessions in my life? And how do I deal with that? Not just the how-to part, because that's kind of easy. Everyone knows how to declutter their closet. The more important part is the why-to, the purpose. Because I think if you get enough leverage, you get enough understanding, that way the closet stays decluttered. Once you've decluttered, you realize the actual benefits of minimalism are far more important than just the act of clearing the stuff out of the way.
All right. Well, gentlemen, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having us.
Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus are the minimalists and the authors of the minimalist.com blog. They'll be appearing at the Book Place at 732 West New Orleans in Broken Arrow this evening for an appearance for their latest book, Everything That Remains, a Memoir. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent programs, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. Just look for Studio Tulsa and you can search through our archives. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.